show that travels America to bring you the voice of the people. Thanks to the makers of... Tonight, Bob, you interview fearless tuna fisherman of the American Fisherman's Tuna Boat East from the huge cannery. Bart Johnson and Warren Hull, regular interviewers on Bart's Pop, are back together again. Bart Hull has been on vacation. So here are your two Bart Poppers, Bart Johnson and San Diego, California.
Yes, folks, this is Pops back from vacation, Johnson.
And this is Warren, still working home.
Yes,
and it's great having you back again, Parks. How was your vacation down on old Casino Ranch?
Warren, it was a lifesaver. Of course, there's plenty of work to do, but Louise and I enjoyed every minute of it, but I am glad to be back.
Well, we're glad to have you. Parks, I hope you took time enough out from your chores to listen to Box Pop.
You bet I did. And after hearing the fine Box Pop jobs that Jinx Falkenberg and Phyllis Brooks and Ann Rutherford did, I don't see why I should come back at all.
Oh, that's just an excuse for more vacation, Parks. But let's get busy now with this colorful group of tuna fishermen. Folks, in this big Rust High School auditorium are some 2,400 fishermen, their families and friends, and each one of them very happy because he's been given a can of the choicest tuna fish sent up here by the different tuna canners in town.
Okay, Warren, and, yes, they're applauding the cans of tuna fish. I don't blame them. Come right in front of the microphone, old-timer. I want you to note, too, that we're in the home of tuna fishing. The San Diego tuna clippers are the finest, the most scientific in the world, and the fleet here is the largest. In fact, this is home, isn't that right? Oh, I tell them who you are. Right with me at the microphone is the first mate of the clipper Golden Gate. He's 44, and he's been fishing since he was 4 or 5 years old. His hands and his face show the scars of many a battle out there on the deep. Those things that they go after, big and little fish. Folks, I want you to know him from San Diego, First Mate Steve Caniglia. I stay to one side and you go right in the middle, Steve. Steve, First Mate is aboard a boat. It's sort of like top sergeant in the Army out there.
About the same.
Uh-huh. Oh, they got a voice like that, too, huh?
Well, sure, they have to use it.
Folks, if you folks who cannot see Steve, you might think that he was about 250 and looks like Andy Devine. Well, he's not. He talks more gravel voice than old Andy does.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, how tall are you, Steve?
5'4".
5'4". But what a chest you got on you and what arms. Are you married?
No.
No? That's strange. 44 years old? Well, what size boat are y'all, Steve?
Just a 5-footer.
Yeah, you wanted me to pass on that marine business, didn't you? Talk about it?
Why was this?
Well, I just wondered if you looked like you didn't want to talk about it.
Well, I was not married.
Tell me about that boat. What size is she?
75.
What size crew you got on it?
Nine men.
Is that what you call a baby clipper?
Yeah, she's a baby clipper.
Uh-huh. We'll get into what babies and big clippers are
shortly.
You fish from racks on baby clippers?
Yeah, on steel racks.
Now, that's
the size of the boat.
Those racks you let down as you get to where the fish are?
No,
and you stand on them?
No, they come down even with your guardrails on the outside, so you can stand on the outside of the boat to fish.
All right. Now, you stand on the outside of the boat. Are your feet wet?
Sure they're wet.
Yeah?
And water comes from your knees to your hips.
You mean
your hips up to underneath your arms up there.
You really fish with water that high on you sometimes?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Ain't that sort of dangerous?
Well, it is. If you'd slide into some shark's mouth after you'd slide off your rack.
Well, now, look. when you're fishing there, naturally the sharks come around in a hurry, don't they?
Yeah. The blood of the fish draws them around all the closer.
And men do slip over?
Well, sometimes. They get pulled in. They don't slip in.
How do you mean pulled in? Just...
from the fish.
Well, why don't you turn loose the pole?
Well, sometimes you're too late turning it loose. You're in the drink before you know it.
Isn't it sort of bad to turn loose a pole in this business?
Yeah, it is. It scares the school of fish away.
Uh-huh. You're supposed to hang on to that pole.
You're supposed to hang on as long as you can.
And if they pull you in, why, go on in with him, huh? The boys
no, they usually turn it loose if you can.
Yeah, I see. Well, now, how many, one man to a pole and so on?
Well, small fish, one man to a pole.
Yeah.
If they're little, bigger fish, you use two poles to one hook.
Uh-huh. The lines
then
come together just
before you get to with the swivels and rings.
Well, when you get a big fish on the end of, say, a three-pole line like that, do you bring him up to the side and then just gaff him and pull him in?
No. You throw him right in.
You just bring him right out of the water, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Well, now, did you ever pulled overboard?
Yeah, I've been pulled over.
A lot of accidents? Say, is there a story back of any of those scars on your face?
There's one of them here. Four poles. We was fishing four poles on the out the Lias Rocks, the old Marconi, and they lifted me right off my deck, off the deck.
You mean they hooked you in the mouth?
Yeah.
Four poles?
Mm-hmm.
And four men lifted you off
I
the deck?
I was gaffing fish. They was fishing them.
Well, you didn't look like a fish to him or anything.
Well, happened? The hook come out of his mouth.
Oh, I see. It
got me.
It got you,
then.
Huh? Steve, you're the first mate. Suppose you come back with a good load of fish. Isn't it sort of the crew, don't they say, we did a good job?
Well, it's supposed to be we have done a good job.
But if you
the
back,
ones to catch them.
But if you come back with no fish, whose job is it?
Well, we didn't get any.
It's a skipper, I thought.
No.
No, they tell me when you come back with a load, we did a good job. When
well,
you come back with no load...
I'll tell you the truth. There's some guys, they say, well, I went out there, I got so much.
Yeah.
I mean, when they caught a big load, see?
Uh-huh.
When they don't get anything, you say, we didn't do any good.
Oh, I see. You won't company anything like that.
Yeah.
Steve, wish we could talk to you a lot more, but we're going to get different angles of this from your buddies back here, as you know.
Okay.
But right now, from Bromo Seltzer, three things here for you. First, it's a combination desk set that you can use in the cabin. It's a barometer, hydrometer, and thermometer, all in one. Boy, that's a snifty-looking thing. And for your apartment or aboard ship, if you want to use them out there, a pair of beautiful all-wool St. Mary's blankets, what color you like. We'll get that color for you fixed. And to keep the sharks away when you are swimming at sea, a pair of red and white plaid swim trunks. Thank you a lot, Steve Caniglia. All right, Warren, ready.
Boy, Steve will sure scare the fish with that. Folks, if you like tuna fish in salads and sandwiches, and most of us do, here's a man who goes out and gets it for you. And he's considerable of a man, too. In his 40 years, he's stretched to 6 feet, 4.5 inches, and amassed 340 pounds. Former football player, now tuna boat owner and skipper, W.S. Pete Zielinski. Pete, we'll have to put this mic up for you, I believe. We'll put the mic up for you or dig a hole for you to stand in, Pete. Say, what size shoes do you tread the deck in?
Oh, 16.
16.
Sure.
Take two ration coupons for your pairs of shoes, huh? Say, is your boat a tuna clipper?
Yes, it is. It's a baby clipper.
Oh, what are the large ones? What size?
The large ones, we call them baby clippers, under 100 feet.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are not many clippers left, are there?
Oh, no. The war has most of them.
Mm-hmm. Navy took them over. What other size boats are there now going out after tuna?
Oh, they're most all boats, 100 feet on down. There's a few larger ones left the government didn't want.
Even two-man boats, I understand.
Oh, they get down as far as two men, one man.
Mm-hmm. Say, tell us about the share arrangements, the way the men are paid on the tuna boats. How does it work on your boat, for instance?
Well, on my boat, after we take all our supplies, such as ice, fuel, provisions of all kinds, when we add that all up into one bill, and that's called our expenses.
Mm-hmm. Any other deductions?
Well, we have a deduction that we also give to our church. It's a month about 50 cents a ton on our boat.
Good.
And after we make our trip, well, those expenses are taken out first.
Mm-hmm.
Then the rest is divided. 45% goes to the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And the one share, the other 55% is divided between nine men.
Well, that's sort of a very unusual sharing in industry, isn't it?
I think it's one of the finest in it's probably one of the finest that could happen because it's a profit sharing and everybody works. If there's a deadhead on the boat, the other crew will sure give it to him.
I'll bet they will. Say, you look as though they eat pretty well on the boats, do they?
Oh, we have the best of everything we can get.
Well, you're out for a long time. What do you do for fresh meat, for instance?
Well, sometimes we run out. We put into a Mexican ranch down the coast, and we buy a steer off them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes as low as $7 will buy us a steer, and I'll bring him down to the beach and swim him out the boat. But we have to give him back the head, though.
Why?
The head and the hide. Well, they barbecue the head. That's what they eat of the steer. That's the big delicacy for them.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Well, it's good that they like that and let you have the rest of the steer. How about bread now? Does the cook have to bake that, too?
No, we don't have bacon bread. Our bread is all gotten fresh out of the bakery here and frozen immediately on the boat. And as we need it, we take it out of the ice, out of the refrigerator, and put it on the top of the stove and let it thaw out.
Well, how long does it keep?
Well, I've seen bread for 90 days as fresh as the day we put it on. Well, I'm going to get me a deep freezer after the war, I tell you. Say, after all these years in the fishing business, does it still fascinate you?
Well, I don't think you can ever really quit it. It's like prospecting or, I say, gambling. It gets in your blood. You'll have to keep after it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you like it still, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Pete, I'd like to go out with you sometime. We understand that Bing Crosby and Annie Devine went out with you once.
Yes, they were good sailors.
But they had a wonderful time.
Yes.
But right now, Pete, it's our pleasure that Bromo Seltzer has for you a Gruen Verathin wristwatch. That'll stand the gaff out there at sea. And after looking all over San Diego, we found a place where we could have made a special strap to go around that 24-inch wrist of yours. And we've ordered one. And for your mother, who likes the old-fashioned kind, here's a white treadle sewing machine in wonderful condition and complete with bobbin. Thanks very much. Good luck to you. Thanks for listening.
Right. Okay, Bob. Friends, for quick, effective relief from the misery of a common sick headache, there's nothing better than Bromo Seltzer. Am I right, John Lang?
Right as rain, Parks, so don't let ordinary headaches spoil your fun. But take a tip from Mrs. D. Cohn of Brooklyn, New York. She writes,
just the other day, I was at the beach having a wonderful time when I began to feel a common sick headache coming on. So right away, I left the crowd and ran for my purse, hoping I'd remembered to put my small bottle of Bromo Seltzer in it.
Sure enough, it was there. So Mrs. Cohn mixed herself a Bromo Seltzer, and...
and in just a little while, I was feeling much better. I figure it's smart to take a small bottle of Bromo Seltzer with me wherever I go, just in case I should need it. And I make sure to keep a bottle of Bromo Seltzer in my medicine chest at home for quick, effective relief from common sick headaches.
And that's a mighty good idea. So get a bottle of Bromo Seltzer for your medicine chest tonight, friends. Try it for that miserable common headache and see for yourself how fast you feel better. Remember, Bromo Seltzer fights headache three ways. Makes you feel better three ways.
Yeah, that's good advice, John, and thanks, Ms. Cohn, for your nice letter. Folks, back here in Russ Auditorium at San Diego, where the tuna fish folks are all with us tonight, is a very beautiful young lady. I say she is, and the folks out front, don't you agree with me? Isn't she pretty? I didn't mean to embarrass you, but that's right. You know, tuna fish are unloaded, and they're cleaned, and they're steamed, and then they're cut up at the canneries. And here from the Westgate cannery is this small, dark, and attractive young lady. She's almost 19, and she's packed tuna for about a year and a half, and we want you to meet her. She's Mary Marina. Hiya, Mary.
How are you?
Mary, tell me, just how small are you?
I'm 4 feet 10 inches.
4'10". You think you've grown?
Huh?
Not quite. A little closer to the microphone. Mm-hmm. Do you have to work on tiptoe at those packing tables?
Mm-hmm. I have a stool about 5 inches tall, so I can reach the table.
Otherwise, you'd be hanging on your chin, wouldn't you? What is your job there in that packing at Westgate plant?
I pack fish.
Yeah, but I know. There you stand at the table, and then what happens?
I put the fish in the cans.
Where are the cans?
Well, they come along on the table.
You mean in the... go ahead.
Through the middle of the table, there's a line going through, and then...
a moving belt.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, where do you get the fish? Where's the tuna?
Well, it's stacked up behind us. And the boys give it to us from behind.
In big bowls or something?
No, trays.
Oh, those trays. That's right. I saw those things. All right. Now, then the cans are in the middle, and the trays are put in front of you. And what do? Just grab a handful and shove it in?
Well, it's cut in different lengths and fits right into the can.
Is there some sort of an art in getting it there without breaking it up?
Well, I think you have to learn how to handle the fish without breaking it.
You better not break it up, eh?
No.
You like it good and solid chunks. So is anything in those cans when it comes through on the line?
Yes, there is. There's a little oil, salad oil, and a pinch of salt.
That's the oil you're supposed to use for salad dressing when you open
That's
it, isn't
right.
it? Uh-huh. Well, now, a tray in front of you and so forth and so forth. I wonder how many trays a day that you can put into cans.
Well, the most I've done is 111 trays.
Well, now, how many cans can you get out of a tray?
Oh, I say about 20, 25. Depends how big the fish is.
Gee, 2,500 to 3,000 cans. That's a whole lot for a little bitty girl like you. What fish do you pack most?
Well, tuna and skipjack. And the albacore just came in.
Oh, that's a pretty
fish.
That's a pretty fish. Does it get monotonous there?
No, sir. I love my work.
Oh, you love your work, huh?
Yes, and Mary, I bet you've packed many and many a fish and many a thousand cans of fish that have gone to our men in uniform over there, haven't
that's
you?
That's right.
You, by the way, any of your folks in uniform?
I have my brothers in the service.
Uh-huh.
He's in the Army, Maryland.
Oh, I hope he's listening tonight. You want to keep it up after sober? Or have you got some ambition?
Well, I'd like to get on here to sing, I guess.
Like to sing?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were told. We knew about your singing. We've got a little something to tell you about that in a minute. But right now, Bromo Seltzer's got for you and that big family of yours, let's see, four brothers, three sisters they are, three cases of picked sweet canned corn. There's cream kernel and vacuum pan corn, canned corn in there. And in a frozen food locker right here in San Diego, where you can take it out as you want it, are 72 packages of picked sweet frozen vegetables and fruits, many, many varieties. And knowing about your ambition to sing, and with a name band, we've arranged with Phil Ullman, the famous dance band leader at the Macombo in Hollywood, to give you a personal audition. That, of course, is going to include your trip to Hollywood and back. And to sort of help doll you up, though goodness knows you don't need it, here's a complete outfit of a violet suit, black velvet trim, black hat to match, bag, and a printed blouse. And thank you a lot, Mary Marina. Do you like it? Ah, it is pretty. Thank you a lot, Mary. All right, Warren.
Boy, that is really a smart outfit, isn't it, Frank? They want you to meet a former tuna boat engineer, owner, and skipper who, when the Navy called in the bigger tuna boats and asked for tuna men, joined up. Bosun's mate, First Class Frank Zalesi. Right over here. Frank, how long have you been at sea, anyway?
About 15 years.
I see. Well, what does the Navy have you doing now?
Well, I'm mostly a tug repairman and a seaman instructor.
Seaman instructor. Well, that's sort of a natural job for you. Say, you better stand up a little closer here. Maybe some of your pals out there will hear this by short wave. What did the Navy do with all the tuna clippers they took over?
Well, they're mostly all in patrol ships now.
Mm-hmm.
And during the time the war was declared, they was used as mostly as like a landing craft.
Well, you where? Out in the South Pacific?
South Pacific.
Uh-huh. Well, they what do? Take in men and supplies?
Yeah, they first they made Marine Raiders, used them as Marine Raiders landing parties.
Mm-hmm.
Then another trip, they provide them with aviation gasoline. They trip for them. Another trip, they provide them with fuel and foodstuffs to bring across the men on the island.
Well, you mean that they had such shallow drafts that they could get right up on the beach?
They get right on the beach.
Oh, that's wonderful. I understand that a good many of them were skippered by former tuna fishermen.
Yeah, there's quite a few, such as Theodore Joaquin and Baz Button,
mm-hmm.
and a few of the others.
Well, they saw plenty of action, too, didn't they?
Quite a bit of action. They were the first ships in action.
Mm-hmm. Were some of them sunk?
Yeah, there's a few of them sunk.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you going back to tuna fishing as soon as the war's over?
Yeah, I'm going right back. Got my own boat.
Well,
wait to throw it aboard.
Oh, good. Are the working hours sometimes longer than they are in the Navy?
They're quiet. They usually work around the clock on a tuna clipper.
You don't fish day and night, do you?
No, but you ice your fish at night.
Ice the fish at night?
Yeah, when you get through fishing.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you ice them?
Well, you usually use one layer of fish and one layer of ice. Just keep going on top till they settle and just keep at it all the time.
You have to pack the fish in any particular way?
Yes, you've got to lay them down with their belly down, one side by side.
You mean like cordwood?
Just like cordwood.
Uh-huh. Well, Frank, when you're fishing, we know that you stand on those racks or sort of platforms along the side of the boat with water sometimes half covering you. Steve talks about that. Do you ever really worry about the sharks?
Well, we don't worry at all. We don't even think nothing about it. We go over the side, but usually manage to get back aboard again.
Do you have to wear any special gear or anything like that?
Well, you can't wear white boots because they attract the sharks. You wear your black boots at all times.
You mean white things attract the sharks?
They do.
Well, I heard that Steve fell overboard once and that he had a white cap on and that a shark made a dive for the cap and just missed Steve's head. He didn't tell Park about that. Does the Navy cooperate with the fishermen these days?
They do, in a good manner. They go out and use blimps and flying boats to spot schools of fish for us now and give us their... We've got our receiving set on up because our radios are all sealed up now.
Mm-hmm.
We can't use them.
But while they're out patrolling, if they should happen to see a school of fish, then they let you know about it, huh?
They do. They let us know about it.
Well, food for the Navy, too. And I want to thank you, Frank, for adding to our knowledge about the tuna fishing industry. Bromo Seltzer wants you to have a Gruen very thin serviceman's wristwatch and a Runson lighter with a servicer kit to keep it working for a long time. And for your home, a beautiful Swedish modern table lamp. It's styled by Heifetz, and it has a soft green, sea green, sort of, basket weave shade. How do you like that, Frank?
You think that'll
do?
Sure you.
Good luck to you. Frank Zalesi. All right, Frank.
Take a tip from me, friends, and find out for yourself what quick, effective relief you can get from the miseries of a common sick headache with Bromo Seltzer. Here's John to tell you why.
You see, even an ordinary headache may make you suffer in three ways. Those head pains may be accompanied by jumpy nerves and sickish, upset stomach. So why take a single acting ingredient product when you can fight headache three ways with Bromo Seltzer? Bromo Seltzer acts on head, nerves, and stomach. Thus, you feel better three ways. Yes, to quickly relieve those aching head pains.
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
To help calm those jittery nerves.
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
To help settle upset stomach.
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
You can take Bromo Seltzer while it's still fizzing or after it settles down. Use it as directed on the package. For persistent or recurring headaches, see your doctor. But for that ordinary nagging headache, Bromo Seltzer is the fast express to quick relief.
Fight headache three ways. Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
Yes, fight headache three ways with Bromo Seltzer. Feel three ways better. Get Bromo Seltzer from your druggist tonight.
Oh, boy, boy, it's sure good to be back aboard this old talking Vox Pop train again. Folks, you know, practically every boat owner started as a fisherman on the racks down there pulling them in. Here's a boat owner who has fished far and wide, and he's full of sea and fish stories. He's sort of the man around here you go to when you want to know things about what has happened and what may happen in this tuna fishing industry. There are two stars on his lapel, I notice, and that service pin. Folks, we want you to know him, Mr. Guy Silva of San Diego. Say, I'm going to call you Guy, if you don't mind.
That's all right, Park.
Fine, Guy. Say, tell me, are those service stars, one of them is for your boat?
No, both of them for my sons.
Where are they?
They're both in the Navy.
Both in the Navy.
And both of them are out in the Southwest Pacific.
Luck to them wherever they are. And but your boat is in the service also, isn't it?
Yes, the Navy's got her, too.
And she's had, they've had her from the beginning?
From the beginning.
Uh-huh. I guess way back there in the beginning when you started on this tuna fishing business, the boats were not as they are today, were they? Tell me they have something
no,
about them.
No, they weren't. They were pretty crude to fish.
Little fellas?
Little fellas, about 25, 30 feet long.
Uh-huh.
Practically no mechanical equipment at all.
Carry much bait, or how'd you handle them?
Well, at that time, we used to keep our circulate our water by hand.
And you mean just throw it in there?
Throw
huh?
it in there. With had the bamboo pole with a bucket on it.
And now those tremendous pumps that keep the water circulating.
And the modern tuna clipper today, the circulating water pumps pump up to 6,000-7,000 gallons a minute.
So tell me, Guy, what is that bait you use?
Well, we use sardines and anchovies.
Uh-huh. And where you get them?
Well, we get the sardines up around here and as far south as about 700 miles.
How much bait do you carry along?
Well, on the larger boats, the bigger clippers, well, our largest clippers, we carry up to possibly 10 tons of live bait.
That much?
That much.
You have to feed them to keep them alive?
Oh, yes. And believe it or not, Parks, I think this is the only case on record where a sardine gets a chance to eat a tuna.
Really?
Yes, sir.
How you mean?
Well, we grind it up. And grind up the raw tuna and feed it to the bait.
Well, I'm a son of a gun. You get the bait to feed the tuna, and then you grind up a tuna and feed the bait, huh?
That's it.
Sort of a roundabout thing. Have you seen any strange or unusual things out there on these various trips?
Well,
to me, I mean unusual. To you,
well,
it wouldn't be.
Possibly. A lot of things that would be commonplace to us, why, would be unusual to you.
For instance,
it's not generally supposed that we would ever come in contact with poisonous snakes.
Out at sea?
Out at sea.
Many of them?
Many of them. Countless thousands of them.
Big ones? Little ones? What?
Well, they're not so big. They're up to about 4 feet in length.
No, I really didn't breathe.
Well, as soon as you get down about 1,000 miles south of here, down in the so-called tropical waters,
Fulham,
why, we see, just I say, countless thousands of them.
Mm. This deep sea fishing is a marvelous thing. I'd like to go out with you all sometime.
I'd like to have you.
Say, Guy, I do a little course for fishing with light tackle. What tackle do you use?
Well, we use 1-2 tackle.
1-2?
Yes, 1-2.
What's 1-2?
Well, 1 they bite and 2 they hit the deck.
Oh, that fast, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we know you fellas are the world's best when it comes to tuna fishing. San Diego's got many claims for distinction, and I think one of the top is the tuna fishing fleet and the tuna fishermen that you have here.
I think so.
Guy, I wish I had more time to talk, but I haven't got it. But right now, from Bromo Seltzer, knowing that you hunt as well as fish, we've got for you a great big, good-looking two-wheel trailer to hook on behind your car when you go out. Can you use it? And from New York, we're sending you a hunting scene, you know, for your trophy room. We know that you like those things. And to dress you up on your next duck hunt, a complete hunting outfit, rubberized cloth. Look, Vox Pop Santa Claus over there has got it on. Can you use it? Thank you a lot, Guy Silver. Okay, Warren. Thank you a lot.
Who knows these tuna fishermen best? Their wives, of course. Well, here's one, a skipper's wife, married to one of the famous seagoing Medinas. Charming young brunette, Mrs. Mary T. Medina. Michael. Say, Mrs. Medina, were you brought up next to the ocean like your husband?
No, I was brought up on a ranch.
I say, well, how come you married him, a sailor?
Well, isn't that rather personal?
Yes, it is. If you don't answer, you don't have to. Do you like being a fisherman's wife?
Well, not particularly.
Why?
Oh, it's rather lonesome.
Mm-hmm. You never know how long he's going to be out at sea, do you?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that their sending radios are sealed, and the seal can be broken only in an emergency, so you never know where he is, how well he's doing, or when he's coming home.
That's right.
Well, does he call you from the pier the first thing when he gets in?
Yes.
Can you tell whether he's had a good catch or not?
That's right.
How?
Oh, by the tone of his voice.
Oh, really? What does he say?
Oh, if he's had a good trip, why, he sort of teases.
Yeah.
And he'll say, well, no. If it's been bad, he doesn't tease about it.
No, I see. Then we know that women aren't supposed to go on their trips, but only the skipper's wife can. And even then, they don't like any woman aboard. But have you ever gone?
Yes, I've made 2 trips.
Mm-hmm. Oh, as what did you sign on?
Yes, stewardess for $1 a trip.
$1 a trip?
And I've never been paid either, by the way.
What? You've never been paid? Say, Dave, somebody got a couple of nice fresh singles here. Look, Vox Pop is going to pay you for those 2 trips right now.
Thank you.
You found out what a hard life it is out there, did you?
I certainly did.
Oh, did anything happen on any of the trips you were on?
Yes, a shark bit one of the seaman's hands on one of the first trips I made.
Yes? What?
Well, a 3-pole outfit was fishing in the next rack, and they hooked a blue shark by the fin.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes a pair of pliers, and he was trying to take the hook off. And the shark flipped around and bit him.
Bit his handle?
Mm-hmm. Well, not all completely off, but bad enough.
What did you do?
Just like a woman, I fainted.
Oh. Well, did they manage to take care of his hand? How did they do it?
Well, they called and radioed the Coast Guard, and they came down and picked him up.
And the Coast Guard does that, I understand. That's a wonderful thing. Incidentally, we'll be glad to talk with the Coast Guard next week. Do you like your husband's crew?
Oh, very much. They were very well behaved.
Yeah? No. No hard language, huh?
No hard language.
Good. Well, we want to thank you.
And I wasn't kidding.
I want to thank you, Mrs. Mary Medina, for the woman's viewpoint on this fisherman's life. And Bromo Seltzer has for you a pair of rhinestone earrings in a smart, modernistic design. And they'll really sparkle, won't they? And something our Santa Claus department found out you wanted especially. It's a beautiful scarf of soft, lustrous Kalinsky.
Oh,
thanks very much for being with us.
Folks, fishing is, as these men have to do it, is not a sport.
It's a serious and a dangerous and important wartime job.
Yes, they deserve plenty of praise for the part they're doing in helping supply our country with that necessary food, fish.
And they're doing it under very trying circumstances, too, because so many of their regular large boats have been turned over to the Navy for wartime jobs.
Folks, from here, our Vox Pop train takes us next Monday to the United States Coast Guard base at Wilmington, California, to help celebrate the Coast Guard's 154th anniversary.
Since its establishment in 1790, the Coast Guardsmen have fought through 8 wars, and next Monday night we'll interview land and craft men, among others, who've been decorated for bravery in current invasions. So don't miss Vox Pop next Monday night. Good night, folks.
So long, everybody.
So long, Bob. Have a good vacation.
Be sure to join Vox Pop, the show that travels America, next Monday night, same time, same station, when Parks and Warren visit Wilmington, California. Friends, your family's health and comfort are vitally dependent on your neighborhood druggist. In war, as in peace, he is at your service. And remember,
fight!
Bromine,
this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.